Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Market View Wrap of the Week. Joining us for our weekly do is Jeff Howie, market strategist at the SGX. Hello, Jeff.
Good afternoon now, Melissa.
I'm sure it's a very good one. You're working from home in a very nice district. So, okay, but let's get straight into this. Very relieved that the Singapore shares opened higher again today. Yesterday was a little dull, in a way, right? Yeah. And that's thanks to the overnight rallies on Wall Street, right? They are related, or is it just a coincidence? What can we infer from this, you know, movement, and maybe in general also for the past week, how the SGI has been doing?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, really, the SGI has really held its line this week. It ended last week at 32.30, and that's pretty much where it is now. During the week, it did gain 1% to make up, I guess, an intra-week high, you could call it, on Tuesday afternoon, and then gradually made its intra-week low on Thursday afternoon. But when you look at where we've been this week, it has been a comparatively narrower or quieter trading range. In fact, this has been the most narrowest trading range we've seen for the STI in as many as 7 weeks. But, you know, nonetheless, what's interesting is it's always the sum of the parts that basically you have so many diversified aspects of the STI that offset gains or losses in another part of the STI that sometimes it looks smooth with the journey of the index, but within the STI you can have some very different performances, and we did see that this week. We saw almost a 20% differential for the first 4.5 sessions this week between the least performer and the best performer in the STI. So the best performer this week really like the least performer, both influenced by these reopening factors, but they're at a very different stage. Hong Kong Land was the STI's best performer for 9.5% gain, and also ranked among the top 5 stocks of the MSCI Hong Kong for the week. But that's obviously, Hong Kong Land has, I think, around 40% of its revenue Hong Kong Macau, 35% is China, 25% is Southeast Asia. Mm. And those gains really coincided with that report highlighting that this recent reopening momentum had seen more visitors arrive at Jack Lap Kok in May than the past 2 years combined. But at the other side, you've had SATS actually decline close to 9%, trimming its year-to-date gain to 6.2%. It reported on Monday its full-year results. Its revenue was up 15% for the 6 months through to the end of March, but at the same time, expenditure was twice as much, up 30%. And that's because it has to very actively ramp its operations to support this travel recovery, and that of course entails increased headcount, higher contract services. At the same time, you've got the tapering of the government grant, so staff costs for SATS were up, I think, more than 50%. So it's interesting. There's the reopening theme, but it's obviously two different STI companies at two different points of time in where they are in the reopening.
Mm. Now, if we were to take a look at what's going to happen next week, how much of the past week's trajectory can we, you know, draw a line from, you know, to look at what might we be able to expect?
That's a good question, because at the moment, and for this year, we have relayed the fact that STI has been among the best developed indices across the world, and that's predominantly because it's made up of 45% banks, and banks have been among the strongest sectors in the world with the increase in interest rates. But what we've seen this week is very different. In fact, this week you've had technology, semiconductor, internet stocks amongst the best performers across the globe, and those sectors had previously ranked amongst the weakest performers pretty much for the most of the year. So here in Singapore, these stocks, they're not part of the STI, but you have AEM, UMS, Franken, ISDN and GBT, semiconductor-related plays, all generating relatively uniform gains, averaging 5% gain over the first 4.5 sessions this week. And this is quite an interesting move, because when you look at where global tech stocks were in late May, they were trading at a 35% discount to the earnings multiples that they were trading at the end of last year. So you've had that component pretty strong and resilient. At the same time, Singapore manufacturing, we know, has been resilient, as has retail sales, as we've just seen. You've had venture and you've had ST Engineering. lead the net institutional inflow so far for the week. Both have also generated uniform gains of 2%. But as we said, if the looking into next week, it really depends on banks, but there won't be much to drive banks because banks, they had only seen just one-third of the declines of tech stocks globally so far this year. So DBS, OCBC, UOB have been, just like the global banks this week, very flat. In fact, our trio are down, I think, just 0.3%. Now, that's a very quiet week for banks. There really were no change in expectations for the next two Fed meetings. However, your expectations for September did revert back to a 50 basis point expectation majority. But nonetheless, you're going to have a pretty quiet week because we're now into that Fed Reserve basic blackout period before they can talk ahead. I think we've got Laurel Brainard tonight and the employment data in the US tonight. But other than that, it's going to be a very quiet week for interest rate commentary and conjecture.
And we know that, I think it was last week, right, the Fed was given sort of carte blanche by Joe Biden to, you know, do what it needs to do, right, to rein in inflation. But in a high interest rate environment, what kind of stocks do you think traders or investors should be looking at?
Yeah, well, it's all come down to what's actually driving those interest rate expectations, because it can always be different. If you've got too much demand and overheating demand and general broad, very strong consumer growth in the economy, then what stocks you look at and what stocks benefit will actually be quite different to what we've got right now. So really what has driven the current inflation is, of course, higher energy prices and then supply chain constraints. The higher energy prices have really been the stocks that have benefited. In fact, when you look at our two upstream oil plays, REX and RH Petrogas, they generated very similar price gains this week of 15% for REX and 10% for RH Petrogas. So the trick is, though, Melissa, that these stocks have gone up with the energy price moves. Where they go from here depends on what happens to energy prices from here till to the to the future.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up energy because my next question obviously pertains to that. Can we expect oil prices to rise further? I think there's some in your industry who feel that oil prices are unlikely to breach 125, or we're looking at the max now.
Yeah, look, it's traded at 125 a barrel on Tuesday night. That was that coincided with those EU leaders basically agreeing on this partial ban on the Russian oil, but it did promptly return back to $118 a barrel on those reports Saudi Arabia could boost output. We basically had the increase in production slightly to 648,000 barrels a day in July and August, up from the expected 400,000. But really, Brent crude oil, it's kind of where it was last week. If you want to kind of look at what's driving it, to look back at the charts of the price of oil, it's the supply shock which is the key issue at this moment. And for that reason, the forward dated futures contracts, they're trading in backwardation. So the market is pricing in oil prices to gradually decline in the forward months. For instance, the current front month of August Brent crude, it's at $117 a barrel. But you look at the DEC 22 contract, it's at $108 a barrel. And then you look at the DEC contract price for DEC 2023, that's even lower at $93 a barrel. So those forwards, they do tend to change on a night-by-night basis as well, albeit to a lesser degree than the spot front month. But the supply shock is very different to a demand shock. So if it was a demand shock like we saw in March of 2020, your Brent crude oil, your WTI crude oil market can go into contango, which means that your forward months are priced higher rather than lower as they are now. But just to sum it up, there's really, I guess, two very big overarching drivers for that price of oil: the COVID impact on demand and the Ukraine impact on supply. So back when Omicron was at its most globally most infectious stage, which was in late January this year, you had Brent crude trading at $85 a barrel. And now with those cases receding and us going back to normalisation, less severe COVID-19, the world opening up, it gradually climbed back to $100 a barrel. But what we've seen then is the Ukraine crisis has so far taken the price of crude to this comparatively more volatile trading band that has crude oil pretty much for the majority of the past 3 months between $100 a barrel and $125 a barrel for the majority of the time.
Yeah, but that's a massive range, isn't it? It's like a 25% difference, right? And it's a killer for people who rely, on the economy, right? But let's focus on, the group of major oil producers. A lot rests on them. I know they've agreed to accelerate oil production after, pressure from the Americans. But what can we realistically expect from them?
Yeah, I think what they're watching, in addition to these COVID-19 cases, which are obviously coming down and now below 500,000 a day, you've got China, very important market for oil. In fact, it is the world's biggest crude importer. We did see a tick up this week in the manufacturing PMI and the non-manufacturing PMI for China, which did get the headlines. But those gauges, they are still in the below 50 threshold, so they're still in contraction. So I would assume OPEC would be looking for more confirmation for a resurgence in China growth before more aggressive output hikes were considered. But I think importantly too, this potential trip by President Biden to Saudi Arabia is important, and it follows the attempts by the US to also reduce price pressures. I think they've done a couple of things, such as releasing the strategic reserves, enhancing their port operations, for instance. That may have also played a factor in the decision of what OPEC has done. So I guess a little bit more kind of unilateral initiatives might actually have an influence there.
I'm going to switch gears now to talk about inflation and from a block or area that I think doesn't get as much attention usually compared with the other, big area, big regions, right? Like the Americas and Asia and China and India. Eurozone, okay.
Yeah.
Inflation there hitting another record high, and we'll talk about another record high, not just, happening. How do you see what's happening in Europe affecting markets in this part of the world?
Yeah, they do. I mean, like you said, it is a very important part that there was some commentary from the Bank of France, from an official at the Bank of France, that inflation is obviously too strong and broad, and that was kind of making this case for normalisation of monetary policy, because in Europe, monetary policy is still in the expansionary stage. So there is an ECB meeting on Wednesday and Thursday next week, which will be watched pretty closely. I think the ECB President Lagarde, she will be speaking at 8:30 p.m. Singapore time next Thursday. The ECB president has also they are expected to end their bond purchases, which is a pretty expansionary policy, as well as signal interest rate hikes. But the narratives that they have and signal to the market are going to be key, because normalizing monetary policy in Europe, it's obviously very different to pursuing a contractionary monetary policy. So they'll be focusing on the normalization part of it, because it can have an impact, Melissa, as you said. If it was a contractionary monetary policy, that would impact growth, and that imports exports of goods and services to Europe. And look, the European Union made up close to 20% of the total value of China exports last year. It makes up more than 5% of the total value of Singapore's exports. So a very important market, and important to watch that they balance this soft landing.
And so for all investors, we should actually be also paying some or a bit more attention to that area, to that region.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much for your time and insights this Friday.
Okay. Yeah, pretty good.
Yes, have a fantastic weekend, and we'll catch up again next week, yeah?
Yeah, look forward to it, Melissa. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Cheers.
Cheers. We've been speaking with Jeff Howie, market strategist at the SGX. Do stay with us right here on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.